Hello and welcome to another Light Reading podcast. My name is Phil Harvey. I'm the editor-in-chief of Light Reading.
I'm John Sasser, Chief Technology Officer of Savvy Data Centers.
John, thank you so much for making some time for me today. I appreciate it. We're here at the Data Center World Conference in Washington, D.C., and I'm very curious about Savvy Data Centers. I know it started as a commercial real estate company, and now it seems to do a whole lot more. Can you give us a little bit of background on what the company does at large and then what your focus is?
Yeah, so Savvy Data Centers is affiliated with Savvy Corporation, and as you mentioned, we got our start in commercial real estate. Dave Savvy was building out these data centers in the late 90s for the early colocation companies that were part of the dot-com boom. Mm-hmm. And then a number of these companies stopped operating data centers in the dot-com bust, and we inherited their improvements. So we took those over. We started operating the data centers ourselves and became Savvy Data Centers as part of the group, focused on wholesale colocation and build-to-suit data centers. So we provide the data center building, our customers provide the IT equipment, and we have three campuses in Washington State, a campus in Virginia, a building in New York City, and we are opening a campus in Austin, Texas.
Ah, yes, Austin, where the tech industry has moved to.
Yes, yep.
When you're looking at a site like Austin or even just any of the other places where you're thinking about, you know, capacity, because obviously one of the big themes at this show, like it was at our OFC, the optical networking show I just covered, was just the influence of AI and all of this. We can get into the specifics of it, but in general, I guess for companies like you, that just means more places to put more servers. When you're looking at new sites or even your old sites, what are your concerns about power and bandwidth? How do you kind of assess things, and has that changed in the last couple of years?
I would say it has changed. The requirements just keep getting bigger and bigger. So, I've been with Savvy Data Centers 21 years.
Okay.
And the size of the data centers just keep getting bigger. We have two campuses in Central Washington State, and for a very long time, the location of the data center depends on the applications that the customers are going to run. Some are latency sensitive, mm-hmm. some are not as latency sensitive. They all require fiber, they all require a certain amount of bandwidth, but some need to be close to where the data is being used, and some don't. So a lot of these large language models, the training is not latency sensitive, so it doesn't have to be close to the people that it's serving. So
right.
The edge still exists. There are still applications that are latency sensitive and need to be close to an urban area or need to be close to the trading engine or something of that nature. But a lot of the AI applications are not, and so they still require fiber, they still require bandwidth, but they don't have to be right next to what's being served. And that frees up some flexibility, because as these data centers keep getting larger and larger, mm-hmm. the power capacity becomes harder to come by. And so to the extent that you can have some flexibility in terms of where to put your data center campus, that opens up a lot more options to satisfy these AI requirements.
Okay. Have the requirements gone up in the existing sites as well? I imagine with more enterprises adopting it, they probably come back to you even after they've been established and said, actually, we're going to try some new things. Mm-hmm. What's changing as far as that goes?
Yeah. So the densities inside the data centers are increasing. And so a lot of the data centers, and we've seen this over time, are designed for the densities in the near term.
Yeah.
So when we first started operating data centers, they were 60 to 75 watts a square foot. And then they moved to 150 watts a square foot. Some of the new data centers, you're looking at 1,000 watts a square foot. You can translate that to 2 kilowatts a cabinet, 5 kilowatts a cabinet. Now people are talking to 50 to 250 kilowatts a cabinet. So things just keep getting denser, but you still have the sunk investment in these data center buildings,
right.
And people want to keep using them. So organizations are figuring out how to continuing to figure out how to deploy the newer technology in the older buildings so that they can get value out of that installed infrastructure. And some of what we're seeing as people transition to liquid cooling is this air-assisted liquid cooling, which is a bridge. So what that does is there's liquid cooling to the electronics inside the server, but that heat gets rejected into the airstream of the data center,
right?
Rather than going directly to the heat rejection equipment. That allows you to deploy more quickly because you don't have to make facility modifications. It also allows a bridging of and a use of these older data centers that were designed for air cooling.
Yeah, that's interesting. So now you can densify the older data centers without having to up your power requirements so much, like if everything were running on fans and that sort of thing.
That's right. That's right.
What's the you know, as far as scale goes, what kind of scale are we talking about in terms of your largest commercial buildings or data center farms, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, our largest data centers currently are designed for around 50 to 60 megawatts of IT capacity, and that's air-cooled with the flexibility to install liquid cooling, but you know, we have all the fans installed to support the air cooling,
right?
And we install additional taps to be able to run more pipes for liquid cooling. We are working on designs of data centers that are north of 100 megawatts in the same footprint or even smaller footprint than some of these, you know, 50 to 60 megawatt buildings. Intended specifically for liquid-cooled, primarily liquid-cooled servers.
Interesting. How about on the power side? Have you run into any issues with power availability in terms of the cities or the states you operate in, or even the concerns about where you might locate next?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We're in Ashburn, and the challenges there are well documented. It's not unique to Dominion and Ashburn. It's something that a lot of the utilities are dealing with. The demands that the data center industry are putting on these jurisdictions, especially where there's concentrations of data centers, say Ashburn or Columbus or Phoenix or Portland, you know, where there's these concentration of data centers, the utilities cannot move fast enough to build transmission to keep up. And so that's, again, why, you know, developers are being more wide-ranging in the location. So you need power, you need fiber, and then after that, then ideally a local community that wants to have data centers there. And you look at other things, but the power, I would say, you know, has always been important, but it is now very, very important as you're looking for large amounts of it.
When a couple more questions, then I'll let you go. I keep lying about how long I think these interviews are, and I get interested, and then it just keeps going. But you know, obviously you're partnering a lot with communication service providers, telcos, in order to have fiber, you know, to these facilities. I have two questions about that. First of all, can they do anything to make their network services more consumable? Like, is there anything that is on your wish list, you know, as a technologist that you could have to make fiber easier to either get to the buildings or to use while it's in the buildings? And then secondarily, I'm very curious about the demarcation between latencies that you were speaking about earlier, where you're training a large language model and it's not as latency sensitive, and ones where they are, applications where they are latency sensitive, just because if you're on fiber, that's got to be a very fine line. So first, let's start with the wish list for comm service providers.
Yeah, so certainly, you know, a lot of what we're doing these days is looking at, okay, where can we site data center campuses to meet these increasing needs? And what we're looking for is dark fiber long haul providers. So long haul providers that can provide dark fiber, because in a lot of cases it may not be latency sensitive, but you want to be able to push a lot of bandwidth through it. And so Very often, the large customers are going to install their own networking equipment. They're going to, you know, what they're going to want is dark fiber, so they're not as limited by, you know, a wave or something like that, and being able to transmit a lot of data. They can install the equipment to transmit lob data. So diverse. They like underground. Ideally, you know, one of the things on my wish list would be to have more transparency in terms of how easy it is to connect. A lot of times, you know, we have tools that will look, okay, here's where the fiber route goes, and we'll have some high-level information from carriers, and they have reasons to be concerned about sharing too much information. But,
sure.
You know, it can be a little difficult to say, okay, how easy is it to connect to that line that's going near this street or that sort of thing.
Right.
That's something that we sometimes struggle with. The second part of your question, as opposed
when you say low latency, I'm always everybody has that term, and I'm always curious as to how fine the line is between especially when we're talking about fiber connected, you know, data centers.
Yeah, I think it does depend on the application.
Yeah.
You know, there's the high frequency trading is one that's used very often, I've heard stories about, I don't claim to be an expert, about, you know, fiber lengths being a certain amount of distance from the engine, so that, you know, they try to get as close as possible to get that working. And then there's a lot of other applications that, you know, one might think would be latency sensitive, but are not as latency sensitive as one thinks, like video games and that sort of thing.
Oh, interesting.
There is some latency sensitivity there, and people, certainly complain about lag and that sort of thing. But
right.
A lot of the latency, you know, people are talking in terms of like 5 milliseconds or something like that, is difficult for people to even, you know, if you're seeing lag, it's probably not because of fiber latency. It's probably because of something else that's going
right.
on in the software and that sort of thing. So, it's difficult for us to perceive. So it's very application dependent. And there are times where, like with CDN networks, you know, you want to be close to load. Maybe because of bandwidth and the cost to transport bandwidth, as opposed to even latency.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's another factor, of course. Yeah. Is the it's how far you have to take that bandwidth.
Yeah. Just the volume of data in a lot of these cases.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. Well, hey, I'll let you get back to the conference. You're speaking here, so I know you've got preparation and everything to do. John Sasser, thanks so much for taking part in the Light Reading Podcast.
Yeah. Happy to do it.